thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3 is what we're going to look at in just a moment. But before we get into that, I don't know how many of you have taken time to read the whole book, knowing that we were going to teach on it this week, or maybe you've read it before. But I've said, and I've made this statement before about this particular book, and that is, you have to be careful how you read it. How many know what I'm talking about? Because you could read it, and if you really don't ask for the Holy Spirit's discernment, and really catching where his heart is, you will walk away from it. I've always used the word bummer. You know, what a bummer. This guy just, he doesn't give us any hope. There's nothing worth living for. And when all my efforts are in vain, vanity, vanity, etc., etc., etc. But there is something in his heart that is revealed. And hopefully we'll get to part of that. We can't cover the whole book, but we're going to cover that one subject, that how do I fit into God's plan, in just a moment. But because of reading the whole book, and two events happened to me this past week that kind of helped me be a little reflective myself. And the one was, is that last weekend, I attended my 50th class reunion back in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. I never went to another class reunion. I tried to go to one before, and when I called back there and I thought, well, I'd go back, my family would go back, and we'd have some time together. And the response that I had, well, what are the activities and all, it was something like this: just bring your own bottle and we're going to have a good time. You know what bring your own bottle is, you know, you come, you bring your own bottle. I thought, same old, same old. So I wasn't about to take my family back and expose them to that. So I never went. So, but this is the 50th year, and I thought, this is a big year. And I got in a conversation with one of my best friends from back there, who's a lawyer in Lancaster. And his wife graduated with me, although he was a year older. And we've been in touch. We talk several times a year. And I was talking to them, and Linda had mentioned, his wife, that she was thinking about going back. She never went to one either. I said, I was thinking about the same thing. I said, I'll go if you'll go. She said, I'll go. So they decided to go, so I said, I'll go. At least I know I'd have, and they're saved. Okay, so that was, I knew I was safe there. So that'd be good. I should say his wife is. Bill hasn't come around yet, but his wife is. So anyway, I went back, and I went back, and here was, and there were 89 that showed up. It was a big class, 310. So we're back there and in this little town, and when I saw them as we gathered together, I won't go through all the activities we did, but I thought, I feel strange. These people are all old. No, I honestly entertained that thought. I'm not exaggerating and trying to make a good story. I thought that. And I had to look at myself. I said, no, I can't look that old. There's just no way. So that was a reality check for me. Okay? So this whole thing of 50 years and all that has happened and what has transpired in these 50 years, just unbelievable. So you can imagine the reflection of God's goodness and God's grace and where he brought me from and where I am today, and then all these other realities. But think about the book here, that some of those people that I run into, I thought, they're just absolutely no purpose in life. Successful men's eyes, a lot of them, they're not all successful, but really, where are they going? They're reaching the end of their life, and most of them are starting to retire, you know, and I don't even have that in my mind, and they're starting to retire, and I'm thinking, where's the purpose? So, kind of reflective that way. So today, I spoke over at Youth with a Mission, and I speak to their incoming class every time they have a new class come in. So they have about 80 students there that are all from all over the country and the world. And they want me to share with them, and they always want me to share my testimony. Because Peter just, you know, said it's been an encouraging thing over the years to share my testimony, but it really speaks to them about how God can take anybody and use them. So that's kind of the purpose behind it. But as I'm sharing that story once again, and I really broke it down to like three things that I attribute why I'm even here today after this many years, and that's number one, the awe of God, and I'm so grateful for my salvation. And that leads you into why you're grateful. And you could begin to list over and over and over again all the things. So I'm doing that today, and I'm just crying at parts of it, and I'm thinking about it again. And the second thing is not only the awe of God, but the voice, the value of the voice of God. That small, still voice that was so instrumental in my growth in the beginning, and is so instrumental to our growth today. But I remember that voice and how it led me and directed me when I didn't touch a Bible, when I didn't have the Bible, when I had no instructors. God was my instructor by His Spirit. And it's true today, He will be your instructor. So there's no excuse, God by His Spirit. And then the third thing was the fear of God. I really believe that was a factor in my life and Cheryl's life, that walking in the fear of the Lord. That doesn't mean afraid of Him. That means an awesome respect of Him for who He is and His holiness. And so I'm reflecting on my salvation, the good things God has done and where we are today. So with all of that put together, and then getting to Ecclesiastes, I have a different view, really, than even Solomon had. In some respects, although he did have a pretty good perspective. And the perspective is that apart from God, say it with me, apart from God, all is vanity. Come on. It really is. Now, are good works done? Yes. Good works are done. Do people achieve things? Yes, they achieve things. Are there advancement? Yes, sir. But in all reality, apart from God, say it again, apart from God, all is vanity. And so that, I think, is bottom line what Solomon is saying throughout the book. That life is vanity and is rarely perplexed if you don't see it in God's eyes, through God's eyes. So here we have Ecclesiastes, meaning preacher. I don't know if you know that. It means preacher. But the preacher this time isn't standing on a platform behind a pulpit preaching at people. He has just come down off the pulpit. And he is just opened up. He is just being honest. He opens up his heart. And he just shares. This is what I've experienced. I've had it all. I've done this. I've done that. And no one is greater than has had greater opportunities. And he goes on and on. So he really bears his heart. Not from a pulpit position, but down with people. So I see three things. And it's not on your notes even. I really jotted these down this afternoon after gathering my thoughts after these two experiences, is that he's really talking about the perplexities of the human life. And he writes it because I think his mind is just full of disappointment by all things, and again, viewed apart from God. That's what he said. It's just there's too many disappointments apart from God. And there's a deep sympathy, you see, for fellow beings who've had the same feelings. So I kind of sense that from his heart. And the third thing I sense from his heart is this, is a desire to lead other men, especially young men, out of the temptation which he felt and the things which he entangled and staggered with himself. So that's what he's trying to say. Listen, I'm sharing these things so you can avoid the same temptations. At least that's what I get from him. So when I read this, I think of more of, wow, yeah, I better listen up. I need to listen to this wise man, because he was still a wise man that said these things. So trying to narrow it down and really get to what would be a good time for us together and kind of our discipleship training opportunity here, I put together, how can I fit into God's plan? Now, what is it that most people say that's somewhat near to that statement, but totally the opposite of? Look at it again. It says, how can I fit into God's plan? What do most human beings say? How can God fit into my plan? Is that true? We actually, I think if we're honest with each other, there are times along, even after we know him, that we are trying to get God to fit into our plan. We kind of lay it all out. There are times when we just kind of let him go and he leads us in his plan. But I think there's a lot of times when we're tempted to or try to force God into the plan that we think is the plan for our life. So we're trying to fit him in. And that's one of the things we need to avoid when we talk about this. So I'm going to look at several principles. Let me read this text out of chapter 3. Let me read the first 11 verses here. And I think just as a reminder to us all, then we'll get into making some points. To everything, there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task in which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in his time, and he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I think, first of all, my mind is challenged with three realities. Number one, I'm not in control. When I read these things, I'm not in control. Matter of fact, I'm so far from being in control. You got to be careful. So that's what I get out of it, is I can't control it. God has a timetable. How many times did he mention time, 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 time? So he has a timetable. God has a plan, and he's in control. The second reality is this. I will not live forever. And that's one of the things that hit me today. If Jesus tarries, for another, I said jokingly, I'll see you the next 50th anniversary. You know, but it really is jokingly. I'm not going to live to be that old. I'll be almost 90 then. I will not live forever. A time to be born and a time to die. Everything has its season. So we're only part of something that we'll never understand is the bottom line and all. And the third reality is this. I was created or made to live beyond myself. To me, this is the most important one. I was created and made to live beyond myself. That's a hard one, especially with our culture. It's so self-centered, so self-satisfying, and so one's self-gratification continually. To not be tempted with that and influenced by that is a real job. It's a real work of labor to do that. But to see that even things that happen, this is what I mean here, I'll get into a little bit more, the things that are happening in my life actually could be for the benefit of other people. Or the direction that God's actually taking me in is not so much that maybe what I'll get out of it, but maybe what someone else will get out of it, either in my generation or in a generation to come. That if we can get a hold of that, man, that's a purpose that takes you way beyond the borders of self. And you begin to move into the realm of being more Christ-like. Because what he had in mind was what? The world. His life was all counted for, not for himself, it counted for the world. It went beyond himself. So if we say we want to be Christ-like, we have to get that one. Our life purpose has to see beyond what we see for ourselves. He put eternity in their hearts. That's a great scripture there. Eternity. And we were created with part of us that knowing that we're part of eternity. eternity in our hearts. So we should think eternal things. We should respond to, we should react, we should have some kind of purpose that is eternal. The most amazing thing about the plan of God in your life and my life is that what we do can benefit other people. And God's plan is going to include that. That's the point I'm trying to make here. God's plan for your life has to include the benefit of His purposes more than benefit of your purposes. So if God has a plan for your life, think beyond that. Okay, He has a plan to, so you have a good job, or you have this many children, or that whatever that might be and entail. But it goes beyond that. And can go beyond that. That's the only way we're going to be able to accomplish what I believe is on the total heart of God. Five words that stick out to me. I want to give you five words that stick out of these verses and out of the book of Ecclesiastes. Number one, sovereignty. And no doubt, when you read this book, we're getting a glimpse from the preacher, from the wise man, that he is sovereign over all things. Sovereign God that He is. There is a right appointed time to everything. There is a season. In Hebrews chapter 12 on your notes there, I put that verse in chapter 4 and verse 13. It says, "And there is no creature hidden from His sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of Him to whom we must give account." But it leads us into verse 16. "Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace." Tie that with verse 13. Nothing is hidden in His sight. All things are naked and open to the eyes of Him to whom we must give an account. "Therefore, come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace and help in time of need." Sovereignty of God. It helps us understand Ecclesiastes when you'd be able to put those two verses together. God sees us, He knows us, and the very fact that He sees us and knows us, then we can come and expect the mercy and grace with everything that we come up against. Because He sees us and knows us. He knows these things are going to happen. Nothing hits Him by surprise. That's why I say, come boldly. God, I need grace for this right now. I need mercy for this right now. My problem, I put down here our problem, but it's my problem. My problem is my time is not God's time. You're always running into that. My time is not, they're not the same. Solomon says he makes everything the appropriate time. Grace and mercy in the nick of time. That's what I put on my, in the nick of time is grace. That's why Paul, when Paul said, "Take this thorn, my grace is sufficient for you." He's there in the nick of time. When some disaster happens in another person's life, I mean, it hurts, especially if you know that person. You say, don't you say this to, "I don't know how they could go through that." And you don't. No one could really say, especially come to a loss of a loved one or a young loved one, that you know what they're going through. No, you almost say, "I don't know how they could go through that," except you know that somehow that very special grace of God is with them. And that's what you could believe for them at that time. And that's what I have to believe for anything that might happen, that special grace, that special mercy that only comes. Now, grace is always available, but only comes is sufficient for that time. When that thing happens, because He's sovereign. And because He's sovereign and He knows all things, this is possible. Corrie ten Boom, there's a story about when they were living in Holland. And Holland was under siege by the Nazis. And the story goes like this, is that Corrie herself was sleeping. And she had a hard time sleeping, which she usually didn't. And she heard her sister Betsy in the kitchen and went down to her because she had a hard time sleeping. And they talked. And she went back to bed. And when she went back to bed, she had put her hand on the pillow and she cut herself on a piece of metal that had come through the window and landed on her pillow. It was shrapnel that had come through from the siege. And she went back down crying to Betsy with her hand bleeding. And Betsy looked at her. What What if I hadn't heard you? What if I had been able just to sleep? What would have happened to me? And of course, Betsy looked at her and said, when you're God's child, there are no ifs in his world. There are no ifs in his world. And that's really depending on that grace of God. When you consecrate your life to God, he's in control. Sovereignty of God. The second word is sufficient. Sufficient. A time for every purpose under heaven. Not only an appropriate time, but a time for every event under heaven. So it's an appropriate time, but a time for every event. In God's timetable, he has a time for every event under heaven. In other words, listen to this. There will be time for God to do what he needs to do in your life, and there will be time for God to do what he needs to do in my life. There's going to be time for it to be. I have to believe that he's sufficient, that I really don't have to search anywhere else, because isn't that really what the vanity parties talk about? We search and search for other things to meet our, to be sufficient. God is sufficient. And he'll do it in his time. He is sufficient. You know what I need to learn is patience. I need to learn patience. Stand still and see the salvation of God. Martin Luther said someone walked in on one time, and he's pacing back and forth, and they said, what's the problem? He said, I'm in a hurry and God's not. How many of us have been there? You know? Come on, God. I see how serious this is, more than you, God. It's not true. It's not true at all. God is sufficient at all times. I have a tendency, and I know this is, that when things aren't getting done, I have a tendency, whether I sense that maybe there's someone that maybe I'm in charge of or the boss or something. I see things aren't getting done. I have a tendency to try to jump in and try to take hold of it and just try to make that thing work. And I'll tell you, that's the kind of attitude that gets me in trouble all the time. Let me give a third word. So we have he's sovereign, he's sufficient, but he's seasonal. Seasonal. There's a time, there's a season for everything. There's a season in the life of an individual. There's seasons in the life of an organization. There's seasons in the life of a business. There's seasons in the life of your family. There are just seasons. You can't get away from the seasons. I don't care how hard you try. They just have to happen for it all to come together. Those seasons are the most healthiest things for us. If we didn't have the seasons, wherever you live, there's something about, there are still seasons no matter where you go. But if those seasons, we wouldn't have what we have. In other words, the result of what we experience of beauty is the season of dryness when things aren't working, but they really are working underneath. And that's the way it's going to be in our life. Don't abandon God in the wrong season, which you think is not the right season. That's a dangerous time. When it gets dry and there are no answers, that doesn't mean God's not working. No, he might be working more than when the season's ripe, which you think is ripe, when all the fruit is being produced. What did Jesus say? He said, the more the fruit, the tree produces fruit, the more you should prune it so it produces more fruit. But the pruning time, a certainly season none of us enjoy. It's seasons of life, seasonal times of God working in our life. Distinct things, special things. A little boy went to a symphony and for the first time, and as he was listening to the symphony and the cymbals were being played, and they really impressed him. So he asked that afterwards if he would be able to go and talk to the guy who played the cymbals. And he asked him, is it hard to learn how to play the cymbals? He said, no, it's not very difficult at all. He said, well, then, so what's the hardest thing? He said, timing. Think about that. The wrong time that cymbal play, it could blow the whole evening. More than a note on a flute or anything else. A cymbal being played at the wrong time. And we're like clanging cymbals sometimes. that Paul even talks about that. It's the timing that is more important than a lot of other things. God's timing is so important, the opportune time. And there are a lot of things I can say about timing and how we come. But let me give you the next word. Surprising. Notice I made it use all S's. Isn't that the way you're supposed to do it, Jason? Yeah, S's, okay. Surprising. Look at verses 9 through 11 there. It says, 9 through 11 says, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in his time. And he also put eternity in their hearts, except that notice this here, no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Listen, God is surprising all the time. He'll surprise you. The minute you think you have it figured out, he'll surprise you. So be ready for the surprises that come our way. From beginning to end, the preacher said, what's he saying? He's saying that God's ways are so much higher than ours that even if we are in sync with God's plan, there will be some surprising twist in our journey. You can be in the perfect will of God, but there will always be surprising twist. Why? Because you can never figure out God. If there weren't surprising twists, that means we came to the place where we think we figured out God. But he keeps us in that position. Because he's past finding out. He's too big. There's too much about God. So there always be, so don't be surprised at the surprising times. Just say, well, okay. God, to me, it's God taking us deeper into searching him out to know a little bit more about him. Not that we'll ever discover all about God, but to go deeper. Surprising times have to happen. Don't be thrown by surprising times. He is surprising. Some people are bothered by that. Some people don't like surprises. I know some people just don't like surprises. Don't give me a party. Don't surprise me. Don't do anything like that. Well, if you're going to walk with God, you're going to be surprised. You're going to be surprised. And you could have what others would say the best possible walk that anyone could have. The joy of following God's plan is not that we always know the next step. The joy of following God's plan is that we know who will be with us in the next step. That's the joy of knowing God. We're so independent. If God gave a plan for me 10 years and he showed me 10 years in advance, I can't tell you what catastrophe that would be. If he really said, okay, here's your 10-year plan, go live. I can't tell you. I know what would happen. I know. That's why he has to be surprising. That's why there's a joy in the God that we serve is surprising, because we'll never know what's going to be next. Now, people don't know God, they don't know what tomorrow holds either. But people who know God know who holds tomorrow. Big difference. Waking up and not knowing that there's anyone there to hold you or take you through it, but waking up knowing, as surprised as you are, God is still there and will take you through it. Now, how are you going to do this one, God? How are you going to work this one out, God? Oh, this is a biggie, God. You know, I'm really looking forward to seeing how you're going to get this one. You know what I mean? There's a joy in that. There's a great joy in that. Let me give you the last word. Safe. Safe. God's plan for your life and my life is exceedingly safe. God's plan for you is not outside of that boundary of being safe. He's not going to take you into something that's going to destroy you. Would you take your child into something like that? No way. We sang about it in the song, oh, how he loves it. He would never lead us down a road that wasn't the best for us. And here's the amazing thing with God. And maybe some people struggle over this. The total sovereignty of God is that, and then our will. That's a big struggle with mankind. But the amazing thing is that God, because he is God, he's able to work everything out for his glory, and for your good at the same time. For his glory and for your good at the same time. In other words, he doesn't set your good aside and say, listen, I got to work on my glory right now. No, he doesn't do it. It's all the same for your good and for his glory. Say that with me. For my good and for his glory. That's amazing God we serve that he can do that. Because I want him to receive glory. But I also know that he's a good enough God and loves me enough that he wants it for my good. The devil would have us to believe that God puts us in unsafe situations in order to get his things done, his purposes fulfilled. That's not right at all. That's not the God that I serve. Verse 14, I'm going to jump down a little. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing can be taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That's why he does things in your life. He's getting a message across. Everything you need, he has. And he's worked out all these things for himself. So, here's a poem. Came across this poem. Listen to it. I like this one. It describes our world and the hectic pace which we have. This is the age of the half-read page, the quick cash and the mad dash, the bright night and the nerves tight. The plane hop with a brief stop. The lamp tan in a short span. The big shot in a good spot. The brain strain and the heart pain. The cap naps until the spring snaps and the fun's gone. That really describes what life is apart from God. Every one of the chapters, and that's only part of one chapter, talking to us about a God that when in control, he'll make sense out of your life. And walking with him, sense can be made out of life. Apart from him, it really does seem like vanity. And a man that had everything. I think we need to listen to the preacher. Amen? Stand with me. He's the preacher. He got down to level. Stand up with me.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.